Okay. All right. A guide to the 12 traditions. This month we are on tradition 4 for April 2022. And next slide. Welcome, fellow travelers. Welcome back to many of our fellow travelers. Thank you for joining us today for our workshop on tradition 4 of the series. You may want to have your big red book for with you. However, it's not required. Maybe helpful. The workshop is being recorded and the audios will be available at a later date. You should actually find the previous three already up and ready for listening and sharing with the members of your groups or inner groups. And the next slide is the Serenity Prayer. So we will all take a quiet moment. And I will do the reading of the Serenity Prayer. If anybody would like to join me, I don't know if we have that capacity right now or not. But deep breath and a moment of silence for the adult child who has not yet found our rooms and our Zooms. Higher power, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage
to change the things I can,
and the wisdom
to know the difference.
Thank you. Cheryl?
Hello and welcome everyone. Our agenda today will include going through our workshop mission and our introductions to everyone here today who will be presenting. Then we'll read our suggested commitment to service and go through our workshop guidelines for today. We'll introduce the tradition and present the skit, and we'll review the questions to consider before we break out into breakout rooms. And then we'll return and do a debrief review of the questions that you've answered in your breakout rooms and do some takeaway sharing. And then we'll close with our tradition meditation.
Next is our mission. Our mission is to provide education and experience through a series of 12 workshops on how the traditions work to keep meetings safe and recovery oriented by practicing spiritual principles. And like to present for you, our presenters, our tech hosts, and our pilot group members also. So today for tech, we have, and you'll see it next to their names, Dee Dee and Samantha. Could you introduce yourselves and tell us where you're from?
Hello, I'm Dee Dee, zooming in from Texas. Thank you for allowing me to be of service today. I'm an adult child. Thank you.
Hey, Samantha, I'm zooming in from Colorado and coming here to help to be a host through Dakota. So thank you.
Thank you. And our pilot group, who we meet with every other week to go through and review our skits and our questions and talk about any feedback that we're receiving from those here who attend. The one who's with us today is Marcin. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Marcin, calling from Essex in England. I'm just grateful to be part of the pilot group. Thanks.
Okay, and we often have Leslie and Michelle, who I don't believe are here today, but we are very, very grateful to all of them for helping us with this. And then we have Mary Jo and Cheryl. I'll let you guys introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Mary Jo, and I am from Des Plaines, Illinois, and I'm grateful to be here and grateful to see all of you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Cheryl, and I am from Toronto, and I'm very happy to be here doing this workshop with everyone. Thank you.
And I am Erin. I'm from the outside suburbs of Philly out in Pennsylvania. And then we're going to move on with the reading of the suggested commitment to service by Mary Jo, Cheryl, and myself. And that is on page 601 of our big red book. I perform service so that my program will be available for myself. And through those efforts, others may benefit. I will perform service and practice my recovery by 1, affirming that the true power of our program rests in the membership of the meetings and is expressed through our higher power and through group conscience. And 2, confirming that our process is one of inclusion and not exclusion, showing special sensitivity to the viewpoint of the minority in the process of formulating the group conscience, so that any decision is reflective of the spirit of the group and not merely the vote of the majority.
Through placing principles before personalities. 4, keeping myself fit for service by working my recovery as a member of the program. 5, striving to facilitate the sharing of experience, strength, and hope at all levels, meetings, intergroups, regional committees, service boards, and world services. 6, accepting the different forms and levels of service and allowing those around me to each function according to their own abilities. 7, remaining willing to forgive myself and others for not performing perfectly.
8, being willing to surrender the position in which I serve in the interest of unity and to provide the opportunity for others to serve, to avoid problems of money, property, and prestige, and to avoid losing my own recovery through the use of service to act out my old behavior, especially in taking care of others, controlling, rescuing, being a victim, etc. 9, remembering I am a trusted servant, I do not govern.
Thank you. Today, our workshop guidelines, we will be sharing in a general way. And for our purposes today, we kind of ask everyone to focus on the topic being presented so that we make sure all the material. Please remember the following: principles over personalities, curiosity over criticism, progress, not perfection, service coming from love, and our halt. Humility, acceptance, love, and tolerance. Tradition 4 is each group is autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or ECA as a whole. We cooperate with all other 12-step programs. Our spiritual principles are autonomy and cooperation.
Autonomy. The wisdom of the fourth tradition allows every ACA group the right to make its own decisions. Within the guidance of the traditions, groups run their own meetings and choose the method for carrying the ACA message within their community. The groups are given freedom to make mistakes. In other words, every group has the unabashed right to be wrong. And when wrong, their decision then becomes part of the growth process, both for the meeting and more especially for the group members. I believe that's what that says. Yeah, for the meeting members. Oh, sorry, I didn't. There's not a typo there. Okay. And then we'd like to call attention. That was actually from page 511 from the Big Red Book. And on 510 of the Big Red Book, I'm going to read the first paragraph at the top of 510. Being autonomous does not mean that ACA groups are alone or operate in a vacuum. As stated, ACA groups seek input from the service structure when questions or challenges arise in ACA meetings. For example, the WSO periodically is asked whether certain reading materials can be used in meetings. The answer is always, per our fourth tradition, that each meeting is free to select the material for use in their meeting. WSO and intergroups do not approve or disapprove material selection for the meetings. There are suggested guidelines in the ACA Literature Policy pamphlet. The pamphlet asks groups to pick materials or books that focus on the 12-step process and 12 traditions. The groups are asked to avoid books which might promote a particular author or move the group toward a therapy session setting. While groups are autonomous, it is a standard for ACA groups to use the laundry list problem, the solution, the 12 steps, and 12 traditions as the foundation of their traditional meeting format. The use of these standard readings and non-affiliation with outside entities are required for a group to be considered an ACA group. You're on mute, Mary Jo.
Thank you very much. We've worked with the pilot group to create a skit which is meant to be dysfunctional. The focus is on group autonomy. And again, tradition four, each group is autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or ACA as a whole. We cooperate with all other 12-step programs. And for the skit, the three of us will do the skit, and Aaron will be the chair. I will be Chris, and Cheryl will be Pat. Okay. All right.
We have chosen by group conscience to revisit our meeting format. Currently, we do not read the problem or the laundry list, the solution, the steps, or the traditions, but we do say the ACA serenity prayer and we read the promises at the end of our meeting. The floor is now open for discussion.
I like what we're doing, not wasting valuable meeting time to read something we all know already. If we read these things, it shortens our sharing time.
For me, when I get to my meeting, and move away from my day-to-day life, I want to be emotionally present for my recovery. This means being reminded that I am an adult child. The traditional readings of the problem, solution, steps, and at a minimum, the tradition of the month are a good transition for me. They help me stay aware of the tools I need to work my recovery.
We made the decision to not do these readings for a reason. I wish we could just leave things alone. How important is it anyway? And scene. All right, we're going to move into a discussion. Frequently we have breakout rooms, but I think today we may decide to work in one big group. The discussion questions are, number one, currently ACA does not have required readings. What would be the pros and cons to having required readings? Two, given that our meetings are autonomous, what types of decisions might groups make that could affect ACA as a whole? Three, what are the limits to group autonomy when it comes to literature, since ACA has an open literature policy? And note, our open literature policy means that ACA groups have the right to use non-conference approved literature conditional upon their group conscience, and that various other considerations are taken into account. For example, that the ACA 12 traditions are used as their guideline, et cetera. Four, autonomy is formed by group conscience. What makes up the group conscience? How and when is the group conscience process used? And five, our fourth tradition is slightly different than other 12-step programs because we have added, we cooperate with all other 12-step programs. What do you think this means? Are there limits to cooperation? So what we will do, the next slide would describe breakout rooms, but we're not going to do breakout rooms. So we will, I think what is appropriate here is that we take a minute to look at these questions before we start to discuss them. Please do that. And then we'll go right into the discussion. Okay, so please raise your hand if you want to respond to the question. And we'll start with number one, and that is, currently ACA does not have required readings. What would be the pros and cons to having required readings, meaning each group would be required to read these things in order to be considered an ACA meeting at the start of their meeting?
Mary Jo? Yes. Hi, this is Dee Dee. Mm-hmm. Would you like for me to pause the recording at this time, or should we continue?
We'll continue.
Okay, thank you.
Dee Dee. Okay. Buddy?
Yes. Hey, I'm Buddy, an adult child of an alcoholic. Now I'm really confused because the discussion question says currently ACA does not have required readings. And yet we just read it in the Big Red Book that the use of these standard readings and non-affiliation with outside entities are required for a group to be considered an ACA group. We do have requirements right there. It's in our book. I'm puzzled.
Good point. Aaron, are you able to respond to that?
So my understanding is that while we have that written in our book, that we have so many meetings that do not use those required readings, and yet we don't say you can't be a meeting. And so, you know, what we're looking at through this tradition is, you know, what is that all about? What do, you know, how should we be functioning? Is that a healthy way to function?
Okay. May I respond then to the second half of that question?
Go ahead.
Okay. So the cons would be that without the readings, how does a newcomer know they're in the right meeting? They may have been looking for a Gamblers Anonymous meeting, asked someone at the building where the 12-step meeting was, and wound up in the ACA meeting room. So without the readings, person could be there for half a meeting before they realize nobody's talking about something I even identify with. Pass.
Good point. Thank you, Buddy. Didi?
Hi, I'm Didi, ACA, and also codependent. It's always been my understanding that there are required readings, such as the 12 steps, the 12 traditions. However, I would like to know if the problem and the solution are considered required reading. I can definitely see pros and cons to having these pieces of literature read in meetings for our newcomers. Is there a difference between required readings versus the problem and the solution? That's my question. Thank you.
Thanks, Dee Dee. Richard?
Hi, I'm Trisha, and I am a codependent adult child. So I have to say that every official ACA meeting that I have gone to does all of the required readings. And I have a small yellow workbook study group that I've actually formed with just a few people, and I know them all. And this happened this week, which is unbelievable that this exact skit happened at the meeting. And because it's only an hour, felt that, you know, okay, we all, you know this stuff, so let's just get right to the workbook. We talked about it, and another member wanted to read everything. So we went back and forth, and, you know, realized that she was right, because there were members who were new, and so they don't know. And I said to her after, I said, you know, with my self-centeredness, I apologize, because you were right. When there is someone new, we do really need to read the acquired materials, because that's the whole explanation of what adult children are, our characteristics, and our solution. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Trisha. Samantha?
Hi, everyone. Let me turn my video. Samantha, codependent, new to ACA. And so I really don't know how much I don't have a lot of experience with ACA, but I know in going to other 12-step meetings that I've been to, it kind of, when you do the required readings or when you do the readings, it's obviously it is great. It takes a little bit longer and it does, but it's great for the newcomers. But it also helps me sometimes be grounded and to get into the mode of the meeting. I might have had a crazy morning or a crazy afternoon. And it's like that taking those deep breaths sometimes when you take it before you start the meeting, even it's another breath to just get you into that main time or that frame of mind and the set to hear it. So that's just my two cents I want to share.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Denise?
Hi, I'm Denise, little child. For me, well, I was one of those people early on that is like, oh man, you know, so I literally thought that I could come in late because I just read the same old thing each time, right? So, I mean, I was there. At the same time, I now understand it sets the stage, it helps my mindset. And I'm constantly getting something different. I always attach something kind of wherever I'm at. And to me, the cons of not doing it, or I don't even know how to put this, but those readings, I think, are essential. And in essence, it's setting the stage, but each one is just skimming the surface. Each one is incredibly deep. And to skip those, I just think it kind of robs the individual and the group of good recovery and all that stuff.
Thanks, Denise. The reading that Aaron did out of the Red Book, it says that the use of these standard readings and non-affiliation with outside entities are required for a group to be considered an ACA group. So it does say that in the book. But somewhere along the way, we don't necessarily, enforce that. Like, there's a lot of meetings out there that do something different. And I guess maybe the question is whether we should go back and say, okay, if you're an ACA meeting, what are you doing as far as these readings are concerned? But then that's sort of a policing type of thing too. It's problematic in a lot of ways, but it does say that here. And I have to admit personally that a couple of my meetings have at times made decisions to skip these readings because then we would have more time to share. And as we've talked about it, and as I've heard other people talk about it too, I've realized, it is a buffer between coming into the meeting, getting centered, understanding where I am, and then moving on with the meeting and eventually into the sharing time. So I really appreciate that perspective, and it's very helpful to me. Thank you. Cheryl?
Hi, my name is Cheryl. I actually have experienced going to meetings where all the readings are read and then being at a meeting where there are, I think, just the steps and maybe the problem, just two, they pick two and do it. And I won't go back to a meeting where I've experienced that because I've noticed the sharing and the grounding and the energy of the meeting hasn't been a fit for me. The readings have always been important for me in my recovery. I probably wouldn't be sitting in a traditions workshop today if the traditions weren't read at every meeting and just getting familiar with the traditions. And I can say, early, it's just words. And then, every meeting that I attended, those words would be connected to my experience. And I'd be like, yeah, I'm living those promises today. Or I get that tradition because it happened in the meeting. We discussed that in a business, so the readings and the words may have been black and white on paper initially, but then they sunk in over the years and over time. And also when I've done study groups with the Yellow Book and the and the laundry list workbook, and currently the LPG. The LPG only has two readings, and I did not like it. I was like, we need to have the five readings. And a lot of newcomers are in that study group, and they don't even know the laundry list. And so it's painful to not have those five foundational readings. So it's I thought, let's try it. But I learned through experience, no, it's for me and my recovery and those that I am with, that I do need to have the five foundational readings. It is necessary for me and my recovery, and I need to share that when I do other recovery things. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Karen?
So, and I think that the answers to this question bring us really right into that second question, because, you know, we are autonomous. We do have the right to, as groups, make these different decisions. We also have the right to be wrong and, you know, learn from them or learn what's right for the members of our particular group. And all that being said, you know, how prominent do we want that message to be of required meetings? You know, and are we hurting ourselves by not having that be more prominent of a message out to the fellowship of required?
Thank you. Karen.
Into question two.
You're breaking up a little bit.
Okay, so maybe moving into question two after Karen.
We have another hand raised from.
Yeah.
Karen?
Thank you so much. I apologize. I was late joining and I'm driving. So I'm trying to manipulate the mute button on the dashboard of my car rather than on my phone because it's easier and safer for me to do. I just wanted to comment that, and I think Aaron actually kind of anticipated my comment a little bit, because I guess the question to me is, where is the group's autonomy to select readings with respect to, in the balance with, like, how is the fellowship as a whole affected? Because I would venture to lean on the side of saying this particular reading that was quoted from the Big Red Book, where these readings are mandatory for the sake of identification with the fellowship, leans towards being a violation of group autonomy, because there could be good reasons within the group conscience process for focusing on a particular reading rather than doing all five readings. And I would personally lean in the direction of being less prescriptive and really allowing the groups to figure that out for themselves. Thank you so much for letting me comment.
Thank you, Karen. So let's look at that second question. So given that our meetings are autonomous, are autonomous, what types of decisions might groups make that could affect ACA as a whole? So my group's decision to either read these readings or not, which is our autonomous decision, frankly, it is. Even though in the book it says they're required for a group to be considered an ACA group, if my group, whatever decision my group makes, how does that affect ACA as a whole? Dee Dee?
Hi, Dee Dee, adult child, codependent. I think the group conscience point is exceptional, because I do not govern as an individual, nor does anyone else. So I think that bringing it to the fellowship or the meeting itself as a group conscience decision is a good idea. And the only way, actually, to get a true feel for how everyone feels and not just one person. So that's kind of where what I'm thinking at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Martin?
Hi, Martin, a recovering adult child. For me, with this question, what types of decision my group make that could affect ACA as a whole is just like, for example, I don't know, group could just, I don't know, decide to start reading Bible or Quran or stuff like this. When for newcomer that would come to that kind of meeting where previously in our group decided let's read Bible, that newcomer would be just confused, you know, why we're reading, you know, stuff that is considered religious. So that what comes to me that, you know, that I think there are some decisions that, you know, group could, you know, that the group could really affect or give a certain, I don't know, flavor to ACA by making their decisions in regards of what to read during the meetings. Thanks.
Thank you, Martin. Denise?
So what came up for me, what types of decisions could affect ACA as a whole. I'm thinking of, well, tradition seven, each ACA group ought to be fully self-supporting. Well, that's an issue, especially now, because a lot of groups aren't sending in money. So if a group is not reading traditions, they're not understanding the safety, and also that part of being self-supporting is also, you know, sending money to WSO. And I'll pass there. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other comments about this one? Okay, Cheryl.
Hi, thank you, Nigel. I actually had an experience where I'd gone to two different meetings and they were reading AA traditions. And I had questioned the group afterward. I said, these traditions are not ACA traditions. And they just said, it's all the same thing. And which I know, you know, minor changes, but they had just changed, you know, AA and made it ACA and just wrote out the traditions that way. And the other group didn't even know there was a difference, even as slight as it might be, difference between the AA traditions and the ACA traditions. So again, to reiterate, although the book may say required, and it possibly could be considered tradition violation of autonomy, you know, our readings, it's a fine balance of what is needed to be considered an ACA meeting. As well, that group also read some Al-Anon literature and did not read two essential readings for ACA. I couldn't go back because it was just not, wasn't where I needed to be, but they were okay with that and reading that. So newcomers to the meeting would not recognize, they could confuse, am I in an Al-Anon meeting or am I in an ACA meeting? So I've experienced the difficulty or challenges of not having quote unquote required meetings to define ACA meetings. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Cheryl. Erin?
Yeah, I heard mention of a group once that apparently there wasn't really an understanding of the traditions in terms of even, you know, the group making a decision together in cooperation, spiritual principle. And there was a new person chairing, and that person was new to ACA. They brought in a speaker who was also new, and they used a pop song for their meeting format. And so not having that awareness of the group conscience and making such a decision like that, you know, how it affected the group members that day and how it affected the newcomers in terms of, is this where I belong? How do I identify? You know, it just comes to mind in regard to this making decisions as a group. I pass.
Did you say pop song?
Yes, they used a pop song.
Meaning a currently popular song?
Yes.
Okay.
Like it was actually a Bruce Springsteen song, if I can say his name.
Okay. Yeah, that would be certainly be confusing for a newcomer. And I think also for my groups, if we make a decision to not read all of the readings, we never do that if we have someone who's new or fairly new. Yeah, that's our distinction. There's some overlap in some of these questions, but I think each one has a little bit of a unique focus. The next one, which is what are the limits to group autonomy when it comes to literature, since ACA has an open literature policy? Note, our open literature policy means that ACA groups have the right to use non-conference approved literature conditional upon their group conscience, and that various other considerations are taken into account. For example, that the ACA 12 traditions are used as their guidelines, et cetera. I think Martin mentioned, you know, what if a group decides to read the Bible or something? There are some limits because we are not affiliated with any outside organization or religion or anything like that. So reading the Bible is generally not seen to be an ACA, something that's part of the open literature policy. But what are the limits? Any responses to that? Or what do you think should be the limits?
Cheryl? Thank you, Mary Jo. Hi, my name is Cheryl. I can speak to this. My home group actually does read the Tony A. book that he wrote.
I'm sorry, can't hear you.
My home group actually uses outside literature. So once, you know, we do read the five readings, but we have a second reading after the BRB, and we read the Tony A. book, the laundry list. The laundry list book. So we've benefited from reading that all other outside conference approved literature from that material. But I could see if I know there's been discussion about bringing in other authors, you know, Melody Beatty and Claudia Black and all sorts of, you know, Wayne Dyer. Can we bring those readings into our meeting group? It's a discussion, not that anything's changed in our format, but I can see that there can be a benefit, and how a group comes to that would be going through the process of making that decision and looking at the pros and cons and looking at the traditions as to how this is going to affect the group and ACA as a whole. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Cheryl. Okay. Any other comments on that? Open literature policy, to me, well, as it stated in one of the things that we've read before, that, you know, as long as it's not promoting a certain author, it's not even like promoting a therapeutic technique or something, that the open literature policy is, we're unique in a lot of ways in what we do in ACA. And I'm not sure if that was because back in the day, we didn't have our Big Red Book until 2006. And back in the day, those of us who were in the program, we read a lot of different things. And to suddenly cut that off and say, no, you can't read those things anymore does not seem reasonable, because we got a lot of recovery out of reading those outside pieces. As long as it's not this meeting is a study of Claudia Black's work to the exclusion of all else or something like that. Well, I don't even know if that's, she doesn't have that much work out there. It's thought-provoking. How far does the open literature policy stray? And maybe that's the better question. How far do you stray? And although stray is a loaded word in a sense, but how far away from ACA type literature should be acceptable to still be considered an ACA meeting. I think that's probably a really good question for just us to think about. Tricia.
Hi, it's Tricia again. I belong to a fellowship that we have a book club meeting. So if, you know, whoever wants to go, if we wanted to read a book, it's separate from the meeting. Mm-hmm. And we just do a book club study. So I don't know if that would help. Thank you.
Thank you, Tricia. Dee Dee?
Hi, Dee Dee. In keeping with the traditions and the principles,
Dee Dee, can you speak up a little bit? I know you have new headset, you said.
Okay, thank you. In keeping with the principles and the traditions of ACA, I do belong to another fellowship in which we do read outside literature for, I believe, one of our meetings. It's an option. It was group conscience. However, in that meeting, it does need to be mentioned prior to reading the outside literature and after reading the outside literature that it is not endorsed literature. However, it has been group conscience approved. Mm-hmm. And so that is how it's done in that fellowship. Mm-hmm. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Dee Dee. Let's move on to the next question. And hello? Autonomy is formed by group conscience. Who makes up the group conscience? How and when is the group conscience process used? So in your experience, in your meetings, who makes up the group conscience? And when is it used? Now, I've experienced questions from groups or from individuals where they say there's a steering committee in this group and they make all the decisions. And along those same lines, we are never asked to make decisions as a group. It seems to be just a few people who make the decisions, even within the confines of the group. Denise?
To me, a group conscience can be, you know, your business meeting should always be a group conscience, but at the same time, anyone can bring up anything at any time and ask for a group conscience, especially if there's an issue or a concern or a tradition not being held. So it's to me, it's safety and cohesiveness. Thanks.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, groups, you know, we always are frequently say to people that if you don't like what's going on in that meeting, either bring it up in a business meeting if there's an opportunity to do that, or find another meeting if you don't agree with how it's being, things are being handled. And that's generally, you know, if I go to a meeting and I don't like what's going on there, how invested am I in this group, or should I just move on to the next one? It's far easier to do that now with Zoom than it was back in the day when, or even as recent as two years ago, when we were mostly face-to-face, and in some areas there were really limited resources to get to a meeting. If there was one meeting and that meeting was run autocratically, what do? Not go to meetings at all? Or do I go to that autocratic meeting and take what I like and leave the rest? So it's something that a lot of people have had to reckon with through the years. Erin?
I'm thinking about different things that have been mentioned over time about group conscience, and that more than one meeting that came to my attention where there's a group conscience that's held at the business meeting. There's an announcement of a group conscience so that everybody has the ability to come and vote before it's actually taken. And then there's, how important is this group conscience to the meeting? So when do we have it? And do we just let whoever's there that shows up at the business meeting vote, or do we wait and try to get more of the members to come along? But I'm also thinking about a meeting that came to my attention, which was somebody wants to make, for example, in announcements, which, I mean, that's what happens in my meetings. We can make a group conscience during an announcement. But in these meetings, you can make a group conscience whenever or during an announcement. And yet it is not taken until the officers of that meeting decide when it should be taken. So that, in my opinion, that to me wouldn't be a group that I'd want to be at, but the autonomy of that group has made that decision stand. So I pass. Just more to think on.
Yeah. Groups operate their group consciences in a lot of different ways and that I've experienced through the years. And one is that the group doesn't make a decision that's essential to the group unless it's been announced well in advance the decision is going to be coming up for a vote. That they don't, in other words, they don't spontaneously make global decisions for the group, which I think when that happens, it feels healthier in a lot of ways, because if the group conscience is open to everyone, which it always is in the groups I'm in, that for someone to suggest something that sort of radical and there's hardly anybody at the business meeting and suddenly it gets enacted and it throws everything up in the air. I've experienced that in meetings, and then it's the regrouping effort to come back to sort of our center takes time. Although I always look at these things as growth opportunities, like, okay, well, what did I learn from this? So anyway, I'll pass. Erin, did you have something else to say? Is that a new hand or an old hand? Okay, Buddy?
Hey, the group conscience, I think is something that's poorly understood. In my other 12-step program, I was told to get a home group and only vote for group matters in my home group. That if I'm attending at a meeting at another group, I ought not to be voting in their business meetings. And the other thing I was taught was that a group conscience is best if it's an informed group conscience. And I've seen this on occasion where the matter at hand to be discussed is not very well understood, and decisions are being made that are contrary to the health of the group because the item at hand is not understood. So those are just things my sponsor pounded into my head. Mm-hmm. To have a group conscience, it really needs to be informed home group members who are aware of the full matter at hand. I have seen it at some other meetings where the regular attendance was usually 5 or 6 or 7 people, and one evening happened to be our business meeting, and there were 22 people present, and we had an item and 22 people voted on it. They were not regular group members. It was just downright silly. But people would be offended if told, if this isn't your home group, don't vote. They figured they were at the meeting. They were entitled to a vote. That's all. Pass.
Thank you, buddy. Erin, do you mind if I call on Anna first?
Sure, go ahead.
Go ahead, Anna.
And I look forward to hearing what Erin has to say too. And thank you to all for having this. I really appreciate what you're doing. And I love how the traditions are reflective of my recovery and how I'm able to live my life now because of recovery in ACA. And two of those things are part of how I see group conscience and the fourth tradition. So first, with announcing first a meeting or two ahead of time, if there's going to be a vote on a topic, to me, I feel like that brings the pause into my life that now I want to have in terms of being an actor rather than a reactor, that's like reflective at the group level of how I want to be an actor, not a reactor, that there's not like this rush that something needs to be changed, that when higher power is involved, then there's comfort in the pause. And the second one that I wanted to comment on comes from actually the suggested commitment to service that says that the decision of the group conscience is reflective of the spirit of the group and not the mere majority. To me, like that, hearing those words helps me to enter into a business meeting or anytime where there's a group conscience, like with that spirit, like let me listen for what is the group, what is higher power, like what direction are we being guided? Not like so much of like a left brain part of society of, okay, let's take a vote. Let's figure out how many of the votes are valid and all of that. But just being open to the feeling of it, which also is reflective of the spirit, as I see it, of ACA and like the recovery that's bringing to my life is just the openness to what are the feelings and the needs of other people, not just let's like do it by the numbers. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Anna. Erin?
It's you know, when I was listening to both the last two shares about it, it was bringing up a memory for me where in my home group, we were taking a group conscience on something. And I mean, it wasn't one of those matters that you needed a whole huge amount of background to understand and this and that. But we had a business meeting. There was someone who was completely new to the program that was there. And we took a group conscience, and her comment was, I guess I shouldn't vote because I haven't been here before. And we actually said, no, we want to hear what you want to say because we want you to be a member of this group. And what you say will help this group grow. And so it was, the spirit of open-mindedness and inclusion. And then I saw the same person at a Ready, Set, Go meeting like several months later, and some conversation that came up with the Ready, Set, Go group, the woman had mentioned being at our group conscience meeting and feeling so grateful and welcomed that even though it was her first time, her voice was important to our group, to our decisions. So with that, I pass.
Thank you, Erin. Thank you. Really great information and discussion here. Thank you. I'm thinking. My brain is just working. I like the idea of the pause and consideration too. Sorry, I've got to reformulate my thoughts. Okay. Let's move on to the fifth question, which is an interesting piece of what the fourth tradition is about, because it's slightly different than other 12-step programs, because we've added, we cooperate with all other 12-step programs. And what do you think this means, and are there limits to the cooperation? I think we haven't been able to completely track down where that came from when these the ACA traditions were adapted from the AA traditions. And so there's always been this surmise about why it was added. But what are your thoughts, anybody? Old hand, new hand, Aaron? Old hand.
Well, it can be a new hand, just because this particular question was one of the questions I was interested in bringing here, because of, it was actually probably 2 years ago that someone was asking me about that second part, that we cooperate with all of the 12-step programs, because they were having a meeting that was sensitive to a very specific topic, and they were being told that they couldn't have this particular meeting or something because the cooperating with other 12-step programs, which was a program which said, in order to be a member of this program, if you were, for example, gay, you had to convert with this religion, you had to have these beliefs, you had to not practice anything there, you know. And so the question came back was, how do we cooperate with all the 12-step programs? That goes against who we are. And I was actually hoping that this would come to an ABC, because that, I think that needs to be rewritten. I think that needs to be, we cooperate if we have it, since other programs don't, you know, we cooperate with all other 12-step, 12 tradition programs. I pass.
Thanks, Erin. Richard?
Hi, I've looked at this. What I thought of it is that we cooperate with all other 12-step programs because all of the 12-step programs originated from AA, as far as I know, and that when I speak, I came from CODA, and so I realize that my codependence is deeply rooted, and it's deeply rooted from my dysfunctional family. And so I think that because ACA has so many people from other 12-step programs, that that cooperation to me is more of an acceptance of other 12-step programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Trisha. Actually, that's sort of where my brain goes with this, is that because we have so many people from other 12-step programs, we were founded by people from other 12-step programs, that it's sort of a nod to that. And I don't know if that's exactly what you meant, but that's what I took from it, but also where my brain goes with this, in our meetings, when we ask if anybody has an anniversary, we say either in this program or any other 12-step program, so that we acknowledge recovery in other programs also, if people want to disclose that. And I don't know if that's necessarily, you know, because we cooperate with other 12-step programs, but it's like an acknowledgement that so many of us started in other programs or even went to other programs in concert with what we do in ACA. So the limits to the cooperation, I like what Aaron said in terms of 12-step, 12 tradition programs. If we keep this in there, that there is a difference, because when this was written 20, 30, 40 years ago, and I don't recall how long it was before, or how long ago, but there weren't anywhere near the volume of groups that call themselves 12-step programs that there are now. and many of them are not necessarily tradition programs. So any other comments about this? Trisha, is that a new hand or an old hand?
Oh, that's an old hand, sorry.
Okay. We've gotten used to saying, is that an old hand? And I always go to that, what generally that terminology is used, how it's generally used. I'm an old hand at that, meaning I have a lot of experience. Okay, so we also had a couple of other questions, but one of them really sort of overlaps with a lot of the things that we've talked about, which is, how do I know I'm in an ACA meeting if each group has autonomy and freedom to decide how they structure their meetings, which might make one meeting completely different than another? Any more thoughts about that, or have we pretty much covered it? All right, and then the other one, what is the difference between an open and a closed meeting? I was surprised to see that in the meeting list, we are predominantly open meetings. And the reason I was surprised is because my groups are closed meetings because we don't want anybody coming who's studying, a student or anything like that, without us, agreeing to having somebody, now anybody can attend the meeting and not tell us who they are, but predominantly meetings are open meetings. What is our everybody's understanding of the difference between an open and a closed meeting? Do you think everybody knows the difference? Trisha?
I just know from myself that closed meetings that I've gone to are in-person meetings that are only for adult children of alcoholics, where you have to be a member. And as you said, like, people can't just come and observe, or, you know, it's like for participants of ACA.
Yeah. I think the official, or somewhat close to the official definition, is that a closed meeting is for anyone who self-identifies as an adult child from an alcoholic or dysfunctional family. But an open meeting is open to anybody for whatever reason. It can be a family member, it can be someone in, like I said, the therapeutic community or educational community or whoever. And I'm not sure that everybody understands that that's what the parameters are of an open meeting. Because for me, I don't know, I think that would change my comfort level and how I share. But maybe that's just me. Anybody? Denise?
I agree with you. I think it is confusing, and especially for newcomers coming in, because we don't know where we belong. And for myself, how confused I was when I walked through the door, seeing being closed, I would have like, okay, here's just another place where I'm not allowed. But yeah, we've had those students come in, you know, they're taking a class in psychology, and they're that's been a while. So I guess all of that to say, I think it's confusing. Thanks.
Thank you. Buddy?
Yeah. I can speak from the AA perspective. A closed meeting is for members of Alcoholics Anonymous or others who think they may have a drinking problem and want to learn if AA can help them. An open AA meeting is a meeting for anyone who wants to learn about Alcoholics Anonymous. that would be, in particular, there's a committee cooperation with the professional community, and AA members work as volunteers to bring medical students, psychologists, therapists, and those kind of individuals who maybe want to refer a client or so to AA. So the cooperation with the professional community would bring those people to an open AA meeting. And the meeting is announced as an open AA meeting to protect the anonymity of someone who does not want to be identified as an AA member. So those who want to maintain their confidentiality would not attend that open meeting format. Myself, I early on didn't care because everyone in the community knew I was an alcoholic anyway. I wasn't going to hide anything. But there are those who maybe because of their employment would not want to be identified, and they would stay away from a meeting that's clearly identified as an open meeting. I don't know if that's helpful.
Thank you,
Bob. Yes.
Tricia?
Hi. I know that I have seen on Zoom where they have been yellow book step studies, and they have closed because they've met capacity or they're into the steps to a section where it's like everybody knows each other now and they are sharing sensitive information. So they have closed the group at that time. That's the other time I've seen it. Thanks.
Thank you for saying that, because I think that points out maybe a basic misunderstanding between closed and open. Closed means a regular closed meeting means that it's still open for people to attend to identify as adult children. The closed designation for like a workbook group, many of them close after the fourth, when they start the fourth step. And that means nobody new can join. And generally, as someone who works with the meeting list, generally when we have meetings like that, we remove them from the meeting list at that point, because, or we make it clear that this is a group that is not accepting any new members because it's a workbook group. But a regular closed meeting, anybody new who is an ACA can join at any time. So that's perhaps something that needs to be better clarified in general with the fellowship. Thank you. And then, are there any other comments that anyone would like to make? I'm going to read one more time, tradition four. Each group is autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or ACA as a whole. We cooperate with all other 12-step programs. Okay. Well, thank you. I think this has been a good discussion. I hope you found it helpful for yourselves. And everyone appreciates all of the input that we've gotten. This will be a recording that will be on the website within a certain amount of time after we get it converted and so on. Could we have the next slide, please? There are some references that you can look at in this slide presentation. Will be part of the information that will be posted. And so if you don't know where this is or you can't copy this down quickly, it's going to be available there. Okay. Next slide, please. And then seven tradition contributions. If you are so inclined, you can go to adultchildren.org and then the seventh tradition or the contribution menu item every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And that's generally meant to refer to the meetings, but it's also meant to refer to the service groups, because we don't accept outside funding. Your contribution is a critical part of maintaining WSO services and delivering the message to the adult child who still suffers. Next slide, please. Okay. We're going, instead of the serenity prayer today, we're going to close with step four meditation. Could I have a volunteer to read this meditation?
This is Anna. I'm happy to read it.
Thank you, Anna.
Tradition four meditation. Higher power, help my home group remain focused on the 12-step process of recovery, while still having its own personality and flavor. When the actions and decisions of my group might affect ACA as a whole, may we find the spirit of cooperation and a willingness to seek help from the ACA service structure. My group is autonomous, but it is not alone.
Thank you, Anna. I had something that occurred to me while you were reading that, but it went away. Thank you all again for being here. This was very helpful for me, and I, like I said, I hope it was helpful for you. If you have any questions, you can email us. Erin, what is our email address?
It is traditions at adult children or ACA. Cheryl?
traditions@acawso.org.
Okay, thank you. All right. Any further questions or comments before we stop?
And do we want to stop the recording for any questions?
Okay, I will do that. Thank you, everyone.